Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
This is a WTOP original podcast.
Coming up in this episode of Target USA.
On Christmas Eve, I got a surprise phone call from Paul Whelan calling from prison.
Just days away from being incarcerated wrongfully in Russia for 5 years, Paul Whelan has a special message for President Biden.
Mr. President, you promised to bring me home. I'm still here.
We hear more of that conversation with Paul Whelan. Plus, we hear from the man who's trying to negotiate his release.
I talk to Paul frequently. He either calls me or he calls my case officer, Fletcher Schoen. We catch up like once every week or two. And we told them repeatedly that, look, you know, there's absolutely no intent to leave Paul behind.
His name is Ambassador Roger D. Karstens. He's the special envoy for the U.S. for hostage affairs.
Coming up on this episode, from WTOP in Washington, D.C., this is Target USA. America has a target on its back. And on this program, we investigate the threats, the people behind them, the agencies fighting them, and the impact on you. This is Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.
I'm J.J. Green. On Christmas Eve, the phone rang at 5:58 a.m. The call rolled to voicemail. The voice on the message was very familiar, even though I had never spoken to this person before.
Hello, my name is Paul Whelan. I'm a U.S. citizen being held hostage by the Russian government. I'd like to speak to you about that.
Hearing the message, my heart dropped because I realized how difficult it must be to get a phone from a prison in Russia and to be able to make a call to the States, and most of all, to make a call to someone like me, a complete stranger. So I waited and hoped. And another call came through. Several others did as well. And here's some of that conversation to give you the context of what it was that was on Paul Whelan's mind and what we spoke about that day.
At this point, the 5-year mark, I'm extremely concerned about being left behind a third time. The Russians are adamant that they only want to do one-for-one exchanges. And as you know, there are two of us here, Evan and myself. I'm concerned that the Biden administration will work out a deal for Evan to be returned home, leaving me here a third time, and significantly limiting the options they have for my future release. When they made the decision in D.C. to trade Victor Boot, they basically abandoned me here. They left themselves without any options for bargaining. And since then, they've been making offers to the Russians, but they're not for things the Russians have asked for. For 18 months, the Russians have been asking for an assassin who's in German prison, foreign exchange. The Germans don't want to give that person up. And so there's a bit of a deadlock. What I don't understand is why the Russians and Germans don't deal with that issue separately between themselves, and why they think it's appropriate to ask the Germans to give up a murderer and send a tourist who's obviously innocent home in his place. There was no espionage. I'm not a brigadier general, nor a secret agent from the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency, as the Russians amateurishly allege. I think at this point everybody knows I'm a tourist. So it's incredible that the Russians would ask for an assassin serving a life sentence for murder in exchange for a tourist. The House and Senate have been quite supportive. My four consulates are quite supportive. The ambassadors come to visit me here. And I know that Jake Sullivan and Antony Blinken care and are engaged. Now, let me just say that the House and Senate have been quite supportive. The four consulates are quite supportive. The ambassadors come here to the middle of nowhere to visit me. And I know that Jake Sullivan and Antony Blinken care and are engaged. You know, the concern that I have is that diplomatic efforts have failed and not enough is being done to secure my release from the very top.
Yeah. So then my question is, what's your message then from to the top, to President Biden, because that's essentially where it is, President Biden and his team. Am I correct?
Right. Yeah, he's the guy that made the decision to leave me behind twice. He's the man that can bring me home. My message to him is quite simply, you know, I've been told that everyone is doing all they can, that my release is a top priority, promises have been made, and I need everyone who has made those promises to now man up and honor them.
And so, President Biden, if you were talking to him on this call, what would you say?
I'd say, Mr. President, you promised to bring me home. I'm still here. There has to be more that you can do to secure my release. You've got to take the fight to them. As Lord Nelson said, engage the enemy more closely.
Are the Russians willing to deal in good faith, do you think, just based on the way that your case happened? They arrested you, detained you, and it was wrongful. Do you think they're willing to deal with President Biden in good faith, or what's happening there?
Well, 3 days after I was arrested, they asked for Marina Butina, Victor Boot, and Konstantin Yurchenko. They repeated those requests several times while I was in custody, and President Trump refused to trade me or trade them. Once President Biden took over, the same requests were made, but then, you know, we had Trevor in the mix also. Then Brittany became involved, and the Russians decided, well, we'll work out deals, you know, with these two lower-level cases, and we'll ask for more for Paul. They've continually asked for more, you know, changing the goalposts the entire time. Now they want an assassin for me. It's ridiculous that we've gotten to this point. In hostage situations, the longer they are allowed to go on, the more complicated and harder it is for them to be resolved.
Yeah. Let me just ask you, I saw your BBC interview and I read about it, and I know that you do this kind of thing at your own risk, at great risk as well. Can you just tell me a little bit about you talked about watching your life drain away. Tell me about that.
Well, this is an incredibly diminishing experience. I mean, body, mind, soul. I'm almost 54 years old, and I'm, you know, forced to work in basically a slave labor camp. The food's horrible. The conditions are horrible. You know, even the showers here don't work. And, you know, showers are few and far between. There's only cold water provided. It's a labor camp akin to the German concentration camps. I mean, it's designed on that model. There are no guards in the barracks or in the factory. There are prisoners that are put in charge by the administration, acting as capos, just like in the German concentration camps, keeping law and order. I mean, the place is a zoo. People carry knives. They use stimulants. There are fights. It's not like our kinds of correctional systems at all. It's not that sort of model. The Russians really don't care about our safety. They don't care about our health. And as I'm an older person, you know, the risk of heart attack, stroke, any sort of industrial accident, you know, makes me worry that I could be seriously injured, and there is no medical care here. There are people with serious diseases, HIV, hepatitis, herpes, other things. They're untreated, and, you know, you're susceptible to all sorts of illnesses, contracting conditions that you never would have been susceptible to in your normal life. So it's an extremely, you know, precarious position. And yeah. I've been here 5 years.
So at this moment, do you feel safe?
The biggest problem that I'm having is with the deputy warden. You know, he has set up provocations to try to have me injured in retaliation for him getting in trouble. You know, he had two prisoners, one that works for him, ask me for $1,100 protection money, which I refused, And then he tried to transfer me to a dangerous barrack where conflicts would have arisen, and anyone could have assaulted me quite easily in areas of the barrack that have no cameras. That's a common tactic here. When the administration doesn't like someone, they will try to set them up. It's called a provocation, and have them battered. They might not be injured very badly, but it's to intimidate and harass as well as injure. I've made complaints to everyone, including the media, and I want people to know what life is like here. I spent, almost 5 years not saying anything, protesting in private and praising in public. And I know there are a lot of people doing a lot of good things for me, and people are trying to get me out of here. But at this point, I feel that I've got to speak out, and I've got to protest in public to make sure that people are actually paying attention and listening. The news from Venezuela is great. The news from Israel is great. But as you look at the past 5 years since my arrest, all sorts of things have come up that have gotten in the way of my case being handled. And, next week it'll be something else. Unless my case is taken care of, unless people put some attention on my case, it'll just sit out here and fester.
Yeah. So tell me about your health, your condition right now physically. How do you feel physically?
Oh, quite depressed, as a matter of fact. I mean, it's Christmas time. I'm away from family. I've been here 5 years. I'm surrounded by criminals. It's not a healthy environment. I mean, these are not my people. It's a way of life that, I am not accustomed to. And even though I've been at this camp for more than 3 years, it is just not for me. And, that's the biggest problem. There really aren't people to talk to. There aren't people to really interact with. I have books, and I write letters, and I make phone calls. But it's not the life that I used to live. And it's not the life that I want to live.
That's a part of the conversation I had with Paul Whelan on Christmas Eve 2023. Now, to the conversation that I had January 10th with Roger D. Karstens, who's the Special Envoy for Hostage Affairs for the U.S., who's working to get Paul Whelan home.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
First off, let me say that I'm glad that you're following this case and that you've been following it so diligently. This was the first case that I took when I came to this job almost 4 years ago. So I came, and I think probably the April, May timeframe, this became the first case, new case that came into me instead of the legacy cases that I was already dealing with. Right. And shortly thereafter, I took my first visit up to see Elizabeth Whelan up in Chappaquiddick. Been to her house two times for sure. We've been pursuing it ever since. So I've been on the case too for quite some time, a lot longer than I thought or wanted to be on this case. But in terms of the question you've asked, I've talked to Paul too. In fact, I talk to Paul frequently. He either calls me or he calls my case officer, Fletcher Schoen. We catch up like once every week or two. We talk to his family pretty much daily. That's even Saturdays and Sundays. We stay in pretty much constant contact with, for sure, Elizabeth Whelan, but members of the family and Paul. And we've told them repeatedly that, look, we don't want to get into the hypotheticals of the negotiation that's currently underway, but there's absolutely no intent to leave Paul behind. The goal is to come up with a deal that the Russians can accept that bring both Paul and Evan home at the same time.
How do you respond then to Paul's statement that what he understands is that the Russians want to do a one for one, and that at the same time he says they keep moving the goalpost. He said in the conversations that I had with him on Christmas Eve that he knows the Russians want to do a one for one, and that the U.S. is not offering the things that they want. So, how does that work? How does that strike you?
So, you know, we talked to Paul and we're very upfront. We know that when we talked to Paul, that the Russians are listening in on that phone call. And yet we're pretty candid because we're negotiating with the Russians. So what if they listen into the phone call? So we're pretty open with Paul on these calls. And we told him, I said, that right now there is no one-for-one deal. So what he's saying there, there are rumor mills that take place in Russia. I would say at times the Russians tried to pass disinformation to the prisoners. They did that with Brittany Griner. They did it with Trevor Reed. They certainly do it with Paul. But right now there's no one-for-one deal. What we are trying to do is work up a deal with the Russians for both Paul Whelan and Evan Gershkovitz. And there is no peeling off right now. The Russians have not come back and said, oh, we don't like your offer, but we want to focus on the one-for-one. Now, I don't want to get too much into the details of negotiation because then we start to negotiate in public. And by experience, that never seems to go too well. But, you know, there's no secret. I think we've all told journalists and Paul and others that a significant offer was made to the Russians in November of last year. The Russians did not take that offer. We continue to try to engage the Russians to find out what it's going to take to get this deal done. But at the end of the day, what makes this so hard, it's not from a lack of movement, desire, or willingness or effort on behalf of the president, the secretary of state, and the entire U.S. government. It comes down to the Russians having the key to the jail cell. And what I would tell you, and I've told Paul this, it's, to my mind, Paul should have never been arrested. And now that he's arrested, the Russians shouldn't make this hard because he's there wrongfully. They should just let him go. We shouldn't have to bargain at all because Paul's held wrongfully. But if we do have to bargain, we would ask the Russians to show up and give us a good faith effort and conduct a negotiation where we can work together to close the gap between our two sides and just bring Paul home.
Ambassador, without getting into things you definitely can't talk about in terms of the negotiations, the process, and people involved, how are the Russians engaging with you? Do they have a counterpart for you, or how do they engage with you? Where do the, Paul has mentioned a few times some of the things that they come up with, they've come up with, and you've mentioned as well, the disinformation that they push through the system. How do they engage with you, though? Who talks to you?
Yeah, that might get into some of the details that we just don't want to put in public, the mechanism or the channels. And it's in a way, it's kind of tragic. I mean, it's interesting to me. It'd be interesting to you. It'd be interesting to your listeners. But there are certain things that when you start to get out in public, it actually bothers the other side. You never want to take a chance that you were this close to knocking out a deal. But because certain things were said in public, the other side backed away a little bit. And so some of the specifics of the deal, we just can't get into as much as in a way it'd be interesting and I'd like to. And then even some of the specifics of how the channel works. I think in doing this job for 4.5 years, or 4 years rather, and over the numerous negotiations we've had, I would say almost every side that we talk to, the other side would prefer that the actual mechanisms of the channel not be discussed, or else it puts it at risk. So please forgive me for shying away from that question.
Yeah, no, it's just the question that I have to ask as a journalist, and I appreciate your candid nature in engaging. This close to knocking out something, do you feel like you're this close to making this work and bringing Paul Whelan home and Evan Gershkovich home?
So I'll use a horrible term that I learned when I came back to the government. It's a term that's called cautiously optimistic. And why I hate that term is it does sound like it gives you too many outs, too many off ramps. But at the same time, that's kind of where I am. And I remember I made the mistake. I tell the story often. I made the mistake of telling a family member that we were really close to bringing their loved one home once. And that person is still in jail. And what I never tell people is that specific example is Paul Whelan. There was a time early on that I felt we were in a back and forth. I thought we might get some sort of traction. And, I was very enthusiastic with the family. And it just, for whatever reason, it just didn't happen. The on that specific case, it's really never us. The other side, as Paul said, they moved the goalposts and weren't able to pull it off. And so I seldom get too specific anymore with the families. I say I can say I'm cautiously optimistic. I owe the families transparency. So if we're going nowhere, I tell them we're going nowhere. Right. If we're actually failing, if the deal that we're trying to work out with an opposing side is actually going in the wrong direction, I'll just tell the families it's going in the wrong direction. So we try to be brutally honest with the families. But when good news is coming, as far as I will take it now, it's just to say I'm cautiously optimistic.
Sir, that is a great point to make because, you know, I can recall early on in Paul Whelan's situation hearing some chatter about the fact that he could be home in a couple of weeks. And he actually mentioned that in a phone call with me, reminded me that early on, you know, there was this situation where the Russians wanted Brittany, they wanted Victor Boot, they wanted Maria Butina and Konstantin Yaroshenko. But the administration at the time did not move on that, and that kind of closed the door, but it also opened up another opportunity for the Russians to change what they were doing. How do you set yourself or prepare yourself to work with this particular situation? For instance, Americans keep getting arrested by the Russians. Yeah. You know, there was another person, you know, I do know that he's a dual citizen, and that's a kind of probably a different case. But how do you approach your work, recognizing that this is something that the Russians may be doing as a process to collect, forgive me for using this term, collateral or people that they can use as tools to negotiate with?
It's a really good question. It's something we talk about pretty much all the time. I'll say this much. It's interesting in that I'm glad you kind of went there. The numbers of my cases and wrongful detentions, people that are taken by nation states, actually the numbers kind of stalled. It might actually be going down. I actually have less cases now. So you wonder if you trade someone to get a deal done, or you give some sort of what might be considered a concession to pull off a bargain that brings someone home. I would say you come to the conclusion, perhaps using common sense, that means that people are going to start taking more people. And that's not really proven to be the case. It's really strange. It's like you seal a deal, and oftentimes you find that the country in question does not go out and take more Americans. But you also might find the opposite to be true, that if you're not able to pull off a deal and bring an American back, countries perhaps might take more Americans to increase their leverage. So you almost have to wonder, is it better to knock out a deal early and then put this to rest? Or if you hold, will you find an interesting creative way to solve the problem? Or does the country go out and say, okay, if one American's not enough, let's take one or two more and see if we can increase the pressure? Every case is different. Every country's different. If there was a way to put a cookie cutter onto all this, or we could do all the analysis, I think it would still be a tabula rasa anytime you show up and start a new case. Yeah, even if another person, you mentioned Woodlands taken Russia, we'll have to get some more facts on that to determine whether he was wrongfully detained or not. But if we were eventually to come to the conclusion that his case or another case, we have a new American that's added, we actually have to an extent, start with a blank slate. You know, we have some experience now in dealing with Russia. We are already in train. We're in motion in trying to bring Paul Whelan and Evan Gershkovitz back, but we would still have to take a look at this case from the start, from a fresh look, to see if there are other things that we can pop onto the table and perhaps leverage. So this is definitely, I would say, a horrific career in which there is no cookie cutter, and I wish there was. It would be nice that if this happened, we went into a certain rhythm, a battle drill, a way of proceeding. Now, we take a look at the cases in a certain way, but it's amazing to me how even in the same country, we'll have to at times come up with different conclusions. Having said that, I'm going to go back to where we started. Where we are right now with Paul and Evan is we are working to bring both of them back at the same time. And we are in negotiation with the other side. We have a back and forth going, and our intent is to just keep hammering away at this until we get it done. I can tell you, we have, as I said, we have a guy that's my case officer, Fletcher, talks to the family daily. I talk to the family often. Elizabeth Whelan's in town. I'll see her tomorrow. We've had a chance to schedule meetings with Elizabeth and the president, the Secretary of State, of course. This administration's engaged, and we all really want to get this done. So I know we're not done with the interview yet, but I want to make sure you know that our intent is to bring both of them on, and we have a full court press, and nothing's going to make me happier than to have Paul Whelan home, me drinking a beer with him at the Exchange Tavern right outside the White House, and then putting this case in my rearview mirror, and then calling Elizabeth Whelan only because I want to wish her a Merry Christmas as opposed to having to talk about her brother's case. That's our goal.
That's it for this episode of Target USA. Coming up in our next episode.
It's a labor camp akin to the German concentration camps. I mean, it's designed on that model. The Russians really don't care about our safety. They don't care about our health.
Paul Whelan talks about the prison, and Karstens shares more about the situation.
We're very firm that we expect the Russians to, protect the Americans that are being held in under their charge. This is a very serious situation, and we're not going to tolerate people being mistreated. It's bad enough that they're arrested and held wrongfully.
That's coming up on the next episode of Target USA. In the meantime, if you have any questions or comments about the program, send me an email. You can reach me at jgreen@wtop.com. The letter J, the color green, one word, at Whiskey Tango Oscar Papa. jgreen@wtop.com. Also, please subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Twitter. We're at TUSA Podcast. That's at Tango Uniform Sierra Alpha Podcast. And if you want more national security news, you can sign up for my newsletter. It's called Inside the Skiff, and you can sign up at WTOP.com/email.
I'm JJ Green, and this is Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.